older than, I'm younger than that now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Middleton, along with Bill Schaefer. Glad to have you with us for another edition of Growing Bolder, one that offers three very important things to jumpstart your life: hope, inspiration, and possibility. Whether you've been thinking about changing jobs, getting a hobby, taking an adventure vacation, making a major lifestyle change, or just stepping up to face life's challenges, over the next hour, you'll hear how others found the inspiration and the motivation to make all of that happen.
And boy, will you, Mark, is on today's program, outrageous comedian Gilbert Gottfried stops by to talk about why his latest project is his favorite of all. We'll have more proof that it is never too late when a woman named Judith McDaniel tells us about hitting law school at 60 and climbing a mountain at 72. Jacques Cousteau's grandson is here to talk about fulfilling a legacy, and we'll meet a man that says it's never too soon to retire. But we start with 80s pop superstar Cyndi Lauper. Amazing people, amazing stories. It's time for Growing Bolder.
I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you.
Oh, man, isn't that great? You know, the voice is instantly recognizable. It belongs to the one and only Cyndi Lauper. Mark and Bill here on Growing Bolder, and this is great music from an album called Detour, a country album. Very different for the woman who first burst on the scene as this wild and crazy pop character who exploded on MTV. Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Mark. That was the anthem of an entire era. But you know, when the 80s went away, Cyndi did not.
Yeah, and here's why. This is what we love about her, because stardom really never was her passion. Singing is. She is an adventurous soul, not afraid to take risks. She's explored her voice, her message. She's reached out to many different genres. She did the standard. She did dance. She wrote the incredibly successful musical Kinky Boots, which, by the way, won 6 Tony Awards. She did a blues album. And what's next? How about another Detour in the country? The album is appropriately called Detour. We are delighted to say hello to Miss Cyndi Lauper. Cyndi, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. I'm good. I'm excited. It's the first, I haven't put out an album in a while, and I'm on Sire Records, and I always wanted to be. So I got to work with Seymour Stein, the legendary Seymour Stein. So, you know, there are very few guys left like that who really do artist repertoire, which means songs, you know. Since 1989, I kind of always looked over at Sire and said, why can't I be there? You know, I'm excited. It's a whole new thing on new people, and I'm thrilled. Couldn't be more happy. And I think the record came out really great. And Nashville, you know, of course, it's not Johnny Cash or Bob Dylan, which when I saw Nashville Cats, I was thinking, yeah. And I saw Muscle Shoals, and somehow along the way, you get so busy being famous, you don't get to do all those cool things, you know? So this was on my bucket list, so I'm pretty excited.
It is not Johnny Cash, but as Bill noted at the top, it is most definitely Cyndi Lauper. And man, it works. You know, as many risks as you've taken, there's always got to be some trepidation, but you and country music seems like a match made in heaven.
Well, I was in a rockabilly band. Like, my first recording band was Blue Angel, and I was, like, the singer-songwriter with John Torrey. I wrote songs with the keyboard player, and, you know, I would listen to all the rockabilly, which was the beginning of rock and roll, basically. And this record, it's the same time period as the birth of rock and roll. And at this time, country music and R&B were very closely linked. And that was the main idea that we kind of clicked with, myself and Seymour Stein, who is a legendary A&R person who co-founded Sire Records and signed groups like the Ramones, the Talking Heads, the Cramps, and then later on Madonna. And a lot of the New York scene that was going on was on Sire. And, you know, except for Blondie, she was on Chrysalis. She was ours, too. You know, got to understand the time. it was so, everything was so new, and, you know, Levi and the Rock Hats, there was a resurgence of rockabilly. So, of course, I was doing that, and I loved it. And I had my own Patsy Cline button. You know, it's like I sang I Fold the Pieces when I was in a Blue Angel band. So this kind of music, at first, I'm thinking, yeah, it's foreign, until I actually started singing Funnel of Love, and everything clicked in my head, and I said, oh, my God, of course. This is, you've done this. This is rockabilly. You know this. And so that's kind of like when I clicked with that band, too, because honestly, the first song I sang with the band in Nashville, I was awful. I sucked. I was bad. And I kind of felt like, oh, my God, I'm not Johnny Cash or Bob Dylan. It's just me. You better connect with these guys, because that's what this is about. Otherwise, anybody could sing on this. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you're making cookie cutters. So I just tried to connect with them and tell the stories and connect with the band, you know. And it's hard when you don't know them, because if you're not willing to cut a vein and bleed a little while you're telling a story, but it's just kind of like you feel embarrassed doing that, you know what I mean?
Hey, Cindy, let's talk about that for a second, because on Growing Bolder, you know, the things we talk about are the things that people are terrified of, and their change, taking a risk, being different, all the things that you've done that people are afraid to do and record companies hate. So how have you been able to do this your entire career? Where does that come from? How can we learn to be more like you?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's like being more like me. I honestly always withstood a lot of things. I heard my mom say once to somebody that I was very different as a child. I stayed by myself a lot. And I think, as I remember it, I thought that the inside world was a lot friendlier and happier than the outside world sometimes. Because when you're different, and you don't have to be different, you know, sometimes if a kid has a cleft mouth or it's a visible disability and you see it, it's hard to deal with. But some people look normal, but they're not regular. And they're ostracized, too. And I think that after a while, I didn't care. And there is a part of me that doesn't care anymore. Because, you know, I used to have rocks thrown at me when I came back from college for wearing vintage clothes that didn't quite fit, but it was a look, you know, and it was new to me. And, you know, I came back to my Italian family, and my grandmother was like, Meg, what is it taking over here and over here? You know, because they had, like, the sewing machine, the sewing room. You know, those of you who are Italian maybe remember your grandmother with the dummy and the sewing machine that she peddled. That was mine. And she lived upstairs. And so everything was like, you get old clothes, you fix them to fit you, because they were part of the industry. In New York at the time, there was a fashion industry, and there were the sewers and the cutters. That was my family, the sewers and the cutters, you know, and my uncle worked his way up to be a pattern maker. But that was the background. So, you know, I never saw myself as an insider. I was always the outsider. So after a while, when people would throw rocks at me because my clothes were different, and I was never a help. I would always turn around and say, yeah, Archie Bunker, where'd you get your outfit from? A rack with 10 others, exactly the same. And then, of course, they just pick a bigger rock and throw it, you know, because, of course, you know, just stupid to say anything. And, you know, then in my life, I actually got to see people dress like me. I mean, exactly. And they would... Some of them were the same kind of people that would have thrown rocks at me. And then I heard a little voice in my head say, well, you still angry? And I would think, well, that's a fine, how do you do? Now everyone welcomes you. One minute they don't like you, and then they like you. You know, you kind of like, a skitsy dog. You know, like you put your hand out to say hello. You're going to bite me. You're not going to bite me. What are you going to do? So it's, I just got used to that. And I got used to understanding that there are gatekeepers, and the gatekeepers that stand in front of you all the time that tell you you can't do something. And I kind of grew up in an environment where people were products of misery, people who could have been, should have been, would have been, but. And I always thought, well, there's going to be no buts for me. It's going to be sink or swim, and I'm going to learn how to swim. And so no matter what, I always try and sidestep. I wasn't, you know, I kind of knew Prince. You know, he was very kind to me all the time. And he used to tell me, you know, he was a brilliant thinker and how to get his music heard and played and bought. You know, he was the first one that came up with the ticket, the concert ticket price. And included in that is the CD. So he was selling his CDs, you know, and he was kind of remarkable. But I was just trying to have freedom. This is a new company, and they welcomed me, and they welcomed my ideas, and they didn't think I was a big pain in the ass because I wanted to do something great. Because the truth is, you hear. You can't say a picture it's just a picture. It's not just a picture. It's going to last a long time. And when you're gone and people are looking at pictures, you want them to pick up a picture and be inspired. You don't want to say, oh, okay, there's a picture.
You know, I wish we had forever to go into even more
I'm
stuff.
So sorry, but no, no. Up all the air.
But
I'm
you
so
know, look at this woman. In you know, nobody expected her to be a star when
Which
she was
woman?
You.
Oh,
and nobody
oh.
expected her to be a
I
star.
Thought you were talking to me.
Growing up, and then look, you know, here's Cyndi Lauper as relevant, innovative, creative, and mesmerizing in her 60s as she has ever been. So for that, it shows some of the benefit of being your own person and growing bolder. For a real treat, folks, check out her album Detour. We think you'll like it as much as we do. And really, for a truly unforgettable experience, make sure you see her live. She puts her heart and soul in everything she does, and that is how Cyndi Lauper is growing bolder.
My head is spinning around and around. I go deeper in the funnel of love.
Up next, he knew what he wanted to do when he retired. He just couldn't wait any longer to do it. This is Growing Bolder.
It's such a crazy, crazy feeling. I speak in the knees. My poor old head is reeling around. I go deep into the funnel of love.
Growing Bolder and Humana are celebrating the opportunity of aging and smashing stereotypes with the new 65 Plus. We're sharing examples of people 65 and older who are pursuing their passions and leading happy, healthy, and active lives. You can inspire others by sharing your own photos and stories. Find more information at growingbolder.com/new65plus.
I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder. Do you know what a countdowner is? You probably work with a few of them and don't even know it. They're the people who know exactly how many years, months, and days they have left until they finally retire.
Yeah, but did you ever wonder why they don't just quit? Well, that is exactly what Bill White did. He didn't plan, he wasn't ready, but he had the drive to start living his life to the fullest, and he didn't want to wait to get started. So he hopped on his bicycle, started to ride, and he hasn't stopped since.
I'm just a guy on a bicycle. What's interesting about me?
Here we go, over the second bridge.
Well, that's Bill White, just a guy on a bicycle who rides everywhere he can. What's interesting is he used to be one of those guys complaining about work and counting down the years to retirement until one day, the day he turned 58, and he just quit.
10 days after my 58th birthday, I was on the way to Key West on my bike on my first bicycle trip. I'm going to figure this out.
What he figured out was all the complaining was pointless without the courage to make that decision to just ride away.
I'm not going to talk you into it. I'm not going to participate in your negativity. I'm not gonna cajole you on, yeah, I'm sorry you gotta work a few more years. You know, if you want to, you could quit today and you'd figure it out. That's what I did. I walked out at 58, I quit, I didn't retire. You know, I didn't have a big stash of money out there. You know, I got enough money to live on, and that's all I need. I don't have a fancy house, don't have a fancy car, don't have a boat, don't got jet skis, don't have any of that stuff. I got a bicycle, and I got my life.
Well, it's Sunday morning. Been climbing this damn mountain now for almost 14 miles.
Instead of sitting at a desk, he's living life behind the handlebars, riding across the country, sometimes months at a time. With one life decision, Bill White pedaled away from work and straight towards things he thought he'd never do.
Yo, baby!
All the different things, from rappelling and ziplining and adventure, extreme adventures in the jungles of Tulum, Mexico, to underwater cavern diving, scuba diving, whatever. Those are just different little adventures.
It was like putting glasses on for the very first time. Bill was seeing the world in a whole new way. One that really snapped into focus on a ride through the California Redwoods when the serenity was shattered by the screech of a minivan.
There was a mom and dad and three kids in the back, and they pull into the parking place just as I'm coming up by them there. They roll the windows down, and everybody's going, look, kids, look, look at the trees. And they roll the window down. He goes, click, click, and they take a couple of shots. They roll the windows up, and off they go in the minivan. And I'm going, God, let those kids out of the car. Walk in the woods. Look what you're missing. Don't, you know, that's not the way to see America. You don't, you're doing it wrong.
To Bill, it was a revelation.
Crossing the Mississippi River on the southern tier. Hallelujah, brother.
Suddenly, he understood what it was he'd been longing for.
And it's not about the bicycle. It's not about being an adrenaline junkie. It's about life. It's about getting out there and doing what you want to do, meeting people, like-minded people, seeing the world.
4 months ago, I left home, 60 years old. Today, I turned over 4,200 miles of riding this damn bicycle up and down the damn coast and all the way across the United States. What kind of damn fool would do such a thing as that? Hell, I don't know.
He believes it's an instinct we're all born with, a desire to experience, one that's traceable all the way back to early childhood.
That's me at about 3 and a half. I was the youngest licensed trout fisherman in North Carolina to catch his limit of trout. And that's me and the game warden.
As a young man, his search for more took off.
Left home at 16, joined the Army at 17, turned 19 in Vietnam, spent the next 22 years roughly in the Army, traveling around Central America, Korea, 9 years in Germany, and different tours around, and met lots of cool people, and got out of that and said, well, I want to start a civilian career, and wound up working for a French company and with headquarters in Paris, so I got to go back to Europe every year for meetings and things.
And now, instead of meetings, he's headed to a different event.
I'm packed up and I'm getting ready to take off on a 90-day, 4,400-mile, another cross-country. It's the 40th anniversary of the Trans-America Trail. Who wouldn't want to go do that, right?
It does sound strenuous for someone who's 63 years old, but Bill has some thoughts about that.
You know, you meet anyone that's 63, I guarantee you, you've broke something, you've injured something, you've got some kind of sickness, you've been in a hospital. Okay, so what? Don't keep telling me about how bad you are and why you can't do this and why now you have to sit around and I have to, you know, seriously, figure it out. You know, if that's the way you want to spend the rest of your life, pretty sad. Pretty sad.
He says we look at age all wrong. Instead of an excuse to slow down, it should do the opposite, even if you have issues.
It should motivate you to be the best person that you can be, to get up off the couch, to get out there every day. You know, you may not ever, depending upon your illness or your injury, you may not ever be what you were before, and that's fine, but don't let it screw up your head. Don't let it, you know, bind you into this thing that says, you know, oh my God, I'm injured. I can't do anything anymore. Give me a break. Give me a break, you know.
And his advice for truly living life?
My God, look around, people. there's a big old world out there. Go see it, and don't do it in a minivan. Get a pack and hike it or bike it or explore it, but get out of the car, get off the couch, get outside your little world, you know, go out there and look at all this. God, it's fascinating, you know, incredible.
Just don't keep waiting till tomorrow for something you could do today.
There you go, 100 miles. Century ride today for my birthday.
When I'm 93, maybe I will be sitting on the porch and the bike will be sitting over in the corner. But I don't want to have any regrets. I don't want to be sitting there going, well, boy, you know, I wish I would have done this, or man, I should have, or I would have, or I could have. Hell, let's go do it. Let's get out there and go do it, because at some point you're going to get to where you can't get out there and do it. You better go do it now. Stop wasting time.
Coming up, he's carried his mission even further than his legendary grandfather, Philippe Cousteau, on what it means when passion, purpose, and legacy all come together.
Support for Growing Boulder provided by
Savings accounts should build wealth, not add expenses. Raisin gives savers access to high-yield savings accounts, money market deposit accounts, and certificates of deposit from over 70 banks and credit unions. Find, fund, and manage multiple savings products all through a single secure login. More information at raisin.com/growingboulder.
Mark and Bill here on Growing Boulder. Have you ever felt like you were destined to do something, or that there's been something out there you really should be fighting for? Well, our next guest may have been born into his destiny, but not only has he dedicated his life to protecting the environment, he's also inspiring countless others to join him in doing the same thing.
He is the grandson of the legendary eco-icon Jacques Cousteau and has established himself as one of the most prominent leaders of the environmental movement out there today. He's the host and executive producer of a show on Fox that's called Awesome Planet. He's won awards for his specials on CNN, Animal Planet, and Discovery Channel, to name just a few. He's written a number of books, and he is the founder of the nonprofit organization Earth Echo International, and he's also started a grassroots campaign to bring the quality of our water to the forefront. Let's say hello to a very busy guy, Philippe Cousteau. Hey, Philippe, how are you?
I'm terrific. How are you guys?
Well, we're doing great, and we're always doing a little bit better when we know there are people like you who are at the front lines of trying to protect our environment. And let's start with the water that we drink, because if anything good came out of the Flint, Michigan situation, it's that we're not taking our drinking water for granted, at least not anymore. Tell us how you've jumped at that opportunity to get us all involved.
Well, you make a great point. You know, the crisis, the terrible tragedy in Flint, you know, that is affecting and will continue affecting so many people for their entire lives because of the lead poisoning, is a really important reminder. And unfortunately, there are a lot of Flints out there. There are communities across the country that knowingly or oftentimes unknowingly suffer from terrible water quality and literally poison in their drinking water. And, you know, be it lead or be it all sorts of other types of chemicals. So it's an issue that, as you said, maybe one of the only good things to come out of it was brought to light and reminded people that we can't take water quality for granted. We can't just assume that our you know, local, state, or federal government is going to ensure that we have good water quality. And so, you know, my work, as you said, every day is really about not just exploring the world, and we do documentaries, and we really have a great time with all of those programs. But through Earth Echo, the nonprofit I founded, we really want to help people everywhere get involved. And the World Water Monitoring Challenge is a program that we took over this past year, and it's the largest world water quality program. And it's really a way for people to get involved in understanding not only where their water comes from, because I can tell you it doesn't come out of the tap. It comes from somewhere, be it an aquifer or a reservoir or whatever, and going out testing that water and then understanding and reporting those results and then doing something about it. Because, you know, we can't take action if we're not informed.
So really, it's about all of us becoming eco-warriors. But you know what's interesting? What seems to set the Cousteaus apart is that you're also eco-educators. So how do you decide which are the projects that are the most important to jump on?
Well, you know, there's so many different issues out there. You know, we focus a lot on water quality issues, on ocean issues, shark issues. Conservation is something that's near and dear to my heart. We actually have a special for Shark Week that's coming out to the end of June called Nuclear Sharks. That's all about sharks in the Marshall Islands. So, you know, there's a lot of issues, as you said, out there. But water's a no-brainer. It's something that we consistently keep coming back to. And if for no other reason, then, you know, we all need water to survive. I always tell people, you know, you can survive 6 or 7 weeks without food, only a couple days without water. And, as we saw in Flint, you know, water is a big challenge. It's an ongoing challenge in this country, particularly with all the fracking and the industrial development. You know, I was just chatting with a friend who grew up in the Dakotas, and he was telling me how, you know, growing up, he could just drink water right out of the tap there in rural North Dakota. And now, because of all the fossil fuel exploration and drilling, they have bottled water delivered to their house. So, you know, it's something that's affecting Americans across the country. And so it's an issue that we keep going back to, and why the World Water Monitoring Challenge is really a no-brainer for people to actually do something and take action.
We're speaking with Philippe Cousteau, who is the grandson of Jacques Cousteau. And Philippe, do you ever talk in at least a little bit of a French accent?
You know, here's the thing. I was born in Los Angeles. My mother's American. My father was the French, the Cousteau side, but he passed away a few months before I was born in an airplane accident. So I never knew him. So that's why I don't have a French accent. And if I do fake one, maybe after a few glasses of wine, it's more of that kind of cheesy cartoon accent. But it can be good for parties.
I think it'd be worth a couple of ratings points at least on your next documentary.
If you insist, I can do that for you.
Very nice. All of that said, what an amazing family legacy you have. And I know you've been empowered by the name, but you certainly have done your part to build it. But do you ever feel trapped by the family name? Ever worried that maybe your life was set out, mapped out for you before you really had a chance to think about anything else?
Well, you know, I have to credit my mom. You know, single mom, raised my sister Alexandra and I. She's my hero. And she never forced us, you know, in any particular direction. Her message to us was always, no matter what you do, just recognize that you have a responsibility to leave the world a better place. And so I didn't feel like I was, you know, necessarily forced in this direction to do this work. I had the opportunity at 16 to go to Papua New Guinea on a research expedition and was, you know, my eyes were open. I was like, wow, you know, you can get paid to travel and make films and documentaries and things like that. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. It was just a great adventure. So it was a discovery I grew up with the knowledge about it, conservation, but it was really a discovery that I made on my own and that my mother gave me the room to make on my own and choose to pursue. So we have a great time doing what we do and I love it every day.
I'm curious too, Philippe, how far do you think that we've come since the days that Jacques Cousteau was capturing the attention of the world through these amazing adventures? Are we making progress globally in cleaning things up and being good stewards of the earth, or are we still slipping away?
You know, I think we are making great progress in many ways. When my grandfather started out, I like to remind people in the 1940s, you know, he invented the scuba diving, or aqualung as they called it at the time, because otherwise the only real way to explore the oceans was either breath hole diving or the old school, 20,000 leagues under the sea with a big copper helmet and a hose to the surface. There was no ability to swim freely. There were no real underwater cameras. The only things we knew about the ocean was what we took out of them and what we dumped into them. And that was really 70 years ago. So when you think really in relative terms to the history of humanity, how much progress we've made in understanding the oceans and understanding the importance of the environment and how those systems help do everything from regulate our climate to provide oxygen and food for people, we've come a long way. However, we continue to make some pretty boneheaded mistakes. You know, the plastic crisis, you know, in the oceans is a big problem. The marine debris fisheries are collapsing. We have, you know, global population skyrocketing, climate change, ocean acidification, you know, the list goes on. But I do think, you know, we're having this conversation right now, and I believe it's because there is a greater awareness, there is greater concern, and people, particularly younger generations, you know, I go to schools all over the world, and it's the constant refrain is, you know, we believe there's a crisis, we believe in a problem, what can we do? And that's the great thing. We don't have to jump over the hurdle of trying to sell conservation to a new generation. They're already in. They get it. And they just want to take action. And that's why we started Earth Echo, and that's why we do things like the World Water Monitoring Challenge.
He makes us think, he makes us ask questions, and he helps us appreciate and better protect the wonders that we have around us, if only he had a French accent. You can learn much more at earthecho.org. Our thanks, as always, to Philippe Cousteau. Coming up, she went to law school at 60, climbed a mountain at 72. More proof that it's never too late. This is Growing Bolder.
We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Bolder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live.
This is Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton along with Bill Schaefer. And Bill, I'm really looking forward to the next interview. Our next guest is a writer. She's a poet, a teacher, and an activist. She's also a lover of nature, an avid hiker, and someone who believes that we should all exercise our right to have our voices heard.
You know what else she is? She's proof that it's never too late to do what you love. How so? Well, she decided she was going to go to law school and enrolled at the age of 60. After that, she became a teacher of law and political science at the University of Arizona, but it was just recently, at the age of 72, that she completed the adventure of a lifetime. Let's say hi to Judith McDaniel. How are you, Judith?
I'm good, thank you. That's quite a good description. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And it only gets better from there. How is it at the age of 72 you became a mountain climber?
Well, I actually didn't just become a mountain climber. I've been climbing most of my life in one way or another. It's just that a lifetime dream had been to go to Peru and see Machu Picchu. And I was always dissuaded because of the altitude issues. But I finally had an opportunity to go, and I said, I'm going.
You know what? And that is why we wanted to talk to you. That's what we love about you, because so many people, as we get older, you know, the couch calls us to sit down and we become afraid. And if we weren't able to do it when we were 30 or 40 or 50 or 60, we're certainly not going to do it at the age of 70. We need people like you to tell us, yes, we can do it. And yes, it's worthwhile. What took you so long?
To go to Peru? It's a long way. It's a long trip. I've been, and it's an unfamiliar trip. I've been to Europe many times. I've been to China, but the idea of going to Peru just seemed somehow more foreign to me. And that was one of the reasons, that I postponed it. I think I would go back easily now because I know a little more about it. It seems a little less foreign to me. But you know what? I grew up as a military brat, and I actually like foreign things. I moved a lot as a kid, and I've never stopped liking traveling.
It kind of toughens you up a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. If it doesn't kill you, it will make you stronger.
Is it fair to say that one of the most influential people in your life has been Harriet Monroe? Tell us about her and how she captivated you.
Right. Harriet Monroe this began the journal Poetry in Chicago in the early 20th century, and she published the poets who are our most well-known poets: Ezra Pound, T.S. Eliot, William Carlos Williams. All of those poets as young men were first published by Harriet Monroe, who recognized their talent. Harriet Monroe in her own right was a poet, but she wasn't as good a poet as she was a judge of good poetry. And she was also a traveler and someone who took risks. And she took risks on the people she published in the Poetry Journal, and she took risks in her own life when she traveled. I find it amazing that someone in the early 20th century could take take a boat, a train, and horse and buggy and go to China or go to Europe or go to Peru. And Peru is where she died. And she was, in fact, climbing a mountain in Peru when she died. And I can't imagine. I just think that's a wonderful testament. She was 74. And I'm only 72, you know? So it seemed to me like it was safe to go to Peru.
Well, and a wonderful testament to you as well, because this is someone that you had a great deal of respect for, who died doing what you wanted to do, and yet somehow you still found the courage to do it. What is it about climbing something? You know, we say that it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. Machu Picchu may be the exception, because when you get up there, I mean, oh my gosh, what is it about the reward that makes the risk worthwhile?
Well, I think there are two things. One, I don't agree that it's not the destination. I always like getting to the top. I must say that that's a spectacular thing for me, is being there and looking down wherever it is, whether it's in the Adirondacks, where I've climbed a lot, or here in the Catalinas in Arizona. But getting to the top is important to me because it gives you perspective on your world. Coming out of the Catalina Mountains and seeing the city of Tucson spread out below me, that's something that you just don't find in any other way. It's a wonderful experience. And the other is simply the physical pleasure of doing that kind of exercise. And you know what? People say, oh, I wouldn't do that. Well, you would do it because it feels so good when you stop.
You know, that's so important, Judith, the reward that we get, because all of us have voices in our heads telling us, no, don't do that. That's dangerous. How do you push past yours?
Well, danger is one thing and fear is another, but I also have another hero, if you will, and that is a woman named Barbara Deming. And Barbara Deming was a peace activist, and she went to Hanoi with a peace group during the bombing of Hanoi in the 1970s. And before she went, people said, aren't you afraid? Aren't you afraid you'll die? And she said, of course I'm afraid. She said, but you can't let the fear stop you from doing what you think is right, from doing what you need to do. I think fear is a companion. It's something that you live with, that you can take along with you, but you don't let it stop you.
Well, obviously, your story is still being written, and I think you might have touched upon what the takeaway is. But at this point in your life, what do you want us to know that you've learned about life? What is the moral of your story?
Keep moving. And it is not about just your physical body, but your emotional body, your intellectual body.
Well, you have packed more purpose, more relevance, and more adventure into your life after the age of 60 than most people do in a lifetime. For that, we are grateful. Our thanks to Judith McDaniel for the example and for the inspiration. Up next, where could your career possibly go once you've been the voice of the Aflac Duck? We'll talk with Gilbert Gottfried about podcasts, comedy, and life. That's next on Growing Bolder. Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider Newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts. The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest. Bill Schaefer here on Growing Bolder. Do you have something that you love? If you can take something you're passionate about and turn it into your life's worth, then you've done something special. Our next guest is a comedian. Tough way to make a living, but boy, has he done it. Stand-up, feature films like Problem Child. He's been in Disney's Aladdin. On television, he was a regular on Saturday Night Live. Commercials, the voice of the Aflac Duck. And he's the host of what just might be the greatest podcast of them all. So great, it's called Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. This man has been growing bolder all of his life. Let's hear his story. Let's welcome Sig Ruman. How are you, Sig?
No, I'm Matt Pendleton.
It is, of course, the great Gilbert Gottfried. And Gilbert, great to have you on the program, because you are one person who is about as bold as it can get, both in a good way and a bad way.
Oh, yeah. So you've heard about it.
I've heard the podcast, Gilbert, and I don't know if I wince or if I need to listen all the time, because it's compelling stuff.
Oh yeah, it's when I started this, I had no idea. I still don't even quite know what a podcast is, and now it's been nominated for as best podcast, and you could vote for it on podcastawards.com. And you could vote once a day.
And it's getting, you don't even need to like get people to do it, because they're listening in droves, because it really is magic. You delve into old Hollywood, to the vaudeville days, to the early days of television. You talk about stars and performers that we all grew up loving or hearing about in a way that nobody does. It's like PBS gone crazy as far as lore and information. Is this your passion, Gilbert? Have you always been a fan of the media?
Yeah, it's like old Hollywood. It's kind of like growing up. I remember there were all these shows like Love Boat and Fantasy Island, where you'd see these people that you swore were dead, and they pop up on these shows, and I would go, oh, they're still as good as they ever were, and they're fun to watch. And so we had on two members of this old show F Troop, Larry Storch and Ken Berry.
Yep.
Who are, I mean, I think they're both in their 90s.
And the F
Troop. And both funny. And both have great stories.
And you're able to get you and Frank are able to get the stories out of these people like nobody else. In fact, you're the very first guest you ever had. And one of the most recent, Dick Cavett. People don't interview this man anymore. He is amazing.
Oh, we've had Dick Cavett on twice. And he's one of those people, you just basically put the mic in front of him, and that's all you have to do. He's a great guest to have. And he's got all these stories. He was friends with, you know, Groucho Marx, and he's had on his show Katharine Hepburn and John Lennon. He had that one of those shows that he'd get these guests that you wouldn't see anyplace else.
And the podcast, Gilbert, takes us back in time, because every once in a while we can hear the great elder Groucho Marx do something like maybe sing a song about the rose.
Yes. See, I became fascinated when Groucho Marx got back to TV when he was, like, really old and really weak. And he would go out and sing these songs like, show me a rose and I'll show you a sagaspray. Show me a rose or leave me alone. And he would tell these stories like, you know, I was working in a theater, and back then a theater was a place where you'd stand on the stage and the audience would watch you, and they'd call this a theater. And you go, oh my God, I want to watch the guy from Duck Soup, and what is this guy?
You know what's really interesting, Gilbert? I think most of everybody knows who you are, but they know you from these real short bursts, either a little bit of stand-up or the Aladdin doing the voice, but they don't really get to know what you're about. The podcast, you talk about Lon Chaney, and you really have reverence for the history of this business.
I love those old stars. Like, I had on, and this to me was a coup. As far as guests, I found this woman who, when she was a little girl, she was in Ghost of Frankenstein with Lon Chaney Jr. and Bela Lugosi. And that, to me, was, you know, better than, like, getting Julia Roberts on. It was like, and she talked about, like, when she was a little girl, she play hide and go seek with Lon Chaney and Bela Lugosi in their full monster makeups. Wow. And I thought, that to me, that's the kind of childhood I wanted.
It's great to hear, Gilbert, and thank you for unearthing these people who, like you say, still have the talent and still have great stories, but nobody's interested in hearing them anymore. And, you know, we're all getting up there. Do you mind? Because in Growing Bolder, we talk about how age doesn't really matter. You're in your 60s, and you're one of those comics that age doesn't really matter to you. Are you comfortable with your age?
I don't think anyone's ever really comfortable with their age, because when you hear it in a number, it's horrible.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's something I've realized too. Like, when we interviewed Larry Storch, he's like in his 90s. He gets up, he stands on his head every day.
Yeah.
And he asked his doctor, should I keep doing it? And he said, well, you've lived this long, you might as well keep doing it. But I've seen these people, like Dick Van Dyke, we had on. In his 90s, he gets up and he dances every day. And we had on Peter Marshall from all the old game shows, and he's in his 90s, and just loads of great stories and funny, and so yeah, it's amazing when you talk to these people.
And you kind of learn that age doesn't really mean a slow downhill descent. These people, if they had a show for them to be on, they'd still be killing it.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's like these shows, like what they used to have, like Love Boat and Fantasy Island. You could see these people. You could see people that you thought, you swore were dead. And they come on, you go, oh, wait a second. They're just as good as they ever were. They still can do the job.
Hey, Gilbert, are you loving life as much as ever? Is this a good period for you?
No, I don't know if I'm one of those people that falls into depressions. But
hey, you're a comic. It's just the way of life.
Oh yeah.
If you were happy, you'd have no material.
Exactly. Exactly. That's something that I always worry about. I talked about, like, depression and problems with Paul Williams was on the show. Paul Williams wrote Rainbow Connection, Rainy Days and Mondays, Old Fashioned Love Song. And I was talking to him about, he used to be addicted to drugs and alcohol. And I'm fascinated by that, too. Like, if you take away bad things in someone's life, will it affect their art?
Yeah, it's that's just part of it too. You know, the other part is did one cause the other? And these are the kind of things that they dive into all the time on Gilbert Gottfried's amazing, colossal podcast. The name is not arrogant enough. Go to GilbertPodcast.com and you'll hear something like, it's great. It's like going back to Merv Griffin with modern day sensibilities. Gilbert, it's been great to have you on the program. I hope we can do it again, because we just want to talk about you and your life at some point. But what a great thing to do, and we support you 100% in the podcast.
And before we go today, a quick takeaway for you, folks. What do you think increases your odds of success? Hoping you'll succeed or expecting that you'll succeed? Your state of mind really can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. In other words, a little bit of confidence goes a long, long way. Of course, it is important to do your homework and do whatever you can to put yourself in the best position, but you've got to believe. Confidence can be just what it takes to push you over the top. That is Growing Bolder.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. Chief audio engineer is Mac Dula, and our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.